We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. My guest in this portion of the program is Glenn Chilton. He's an ornithologist and behavioral ecologist, and he's the world's leading authority on the extinct Labrador duck. In fact, he is obsessed with the Labrador duck, and this obsession led him on a chase of sorts, a wild, decade-long chase looking for dead ducks. He hunted down Labrador duck specimens scattered across Europe and North America. He tells the tale of the duck and the chase in his book, The Curse of the Labrador Duck, My Obsessive Quest to the Edge of Extinction. The publisher is Simon and Schuster. Dr. Glenn Chilton, good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm very well, Celeste. Thank you.
What was the Labrador duck like?
Well, it was a sea duck, and so if it wasn't busy on land, sitting on eggs or attending to chicks, it was out in the ocean feeding. And the male was a beautiful black and white, the female, you know, dull gray brown, as ducks tend to be.
Where was it found?
Aha, uh-huh. Well, even that's a bit of a trick when dealing with things that went extinct over 100 years ago. To the best of our knowledge, it spent its summers breeding up somewhere around Labrador in Canada, maybe even a bit further north in Quebec. But we do know where it spent the winter. It spent most of its time in the non-breeding season around New York City.
Do we know what led to its extinction, being as it's been so long now?
Well, it has been so long, and there have been a lot of guesses, like perhaps we hunted it to extinction. But I don't think that's likely, because everyone at the time knew how bad they tasted. No one hunted them for food. And some said that a lot of eggs were taken on the breeding grounds, but there's no record of that. My best guess is, Celeste, that they went extinct because of that connection to New York City. They were foraging just offshore at the same time when the human population was going up and all the waste was going untreated into the ocean. I think the poor Labrador duck got polluted into extinction.
Interesting.
Yeah.
After writing an account of the white-crowned sparrow for the Birds of North America series, you were asked to write an account of another species, and you chose the Labrador duck, thinking it would be a short account because there's so many things that are unknown about this bird. How did a short account become an obsession?
Well, the obsession came first. I've got this terribly obsessive personality, and I just can't let things go. So when I was trying to make sure I had accounted for every stuffed specimen in the world, the stories that came out about these specimens were just so outrageous that I said, that's fine, I'm going to go out and I'm going to visit every stuffed specimen. I'm going to examine and measure every specimen in the entire world. You know how these things are. It just got carried away.
Who collected these specimens?
In the 19th century, they were collected by individuals for sale, and they would sell them to museums with enough money or private collectors. So if you were adventurous enough, you'd head off to the wilds of North America and shoot them, stuff them, and ship them back off into Europe.
Where did you begin your chase?
Well, I figure since it's the Labrador duck, perhaps I had to start in Labrador.
Right.
And so I did. That's where I went. I was on the trail of John James Audubon, who claimed that he and his son had found the nests of Labrador ducks in a tiny little community called Blanc-Sablon. And so, golly, 9 years ago now, I went off to Labrador Duck to find the hillside where they found those nests.
And it turned out that maybe Mr. Audubon was mistaken?
Oh, mistaken, or he had a bad memory. He wrote about the Labrador Duck nests in 1843 when he was putting together his Birds of North America, the double elephant folio book. But I read his journals, the notes he kept on the day when he was there in 1833, and when he was in Blanc-Sablon, he said, we looked, we couldn't find the nests. And so I'm forced to believe he misremembered or perhaps fabricated the story.
Mm. Where else did your search take you?
Everywhere, around and around the world. I went 3.5 times around the world in search of these ducks. So all the great museums of North America, like the Royal Ontario Museum, the American Museum of Natural History in New York, the Smithsonian, and then overseas to such exotic places as St. Petersburg in Russia, and Leiden in the Netherlands, and Berlin in Germany. I was on the road for years.
Tens of thousands of miles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a very understanding wife.
Good. Good. Well, would you tell us about a couple of the, odd ducks you encountered along the way?
Oh, odd ducks. Well, there's a good story attached to each of the ones I found, but among the stranger ones were a duck in Halberstadt in Germany, in the middle of nowhere Germany, a tiny little museum. And they've got a collection of a couple of thousand birds, and their Labrador duck was the absolute best specimen they had. And no one had come to look at it in probably about 200 years. And I got to the museum, and I sat down, and they brought the duck out and put it down in front of me, and it was a fake. It wasn't a Labrador duck at all. It was a domestic white duck that somebody had painted black and white to look like a Labrador duck. And in 200 years, no one had thought to have a good look at it. And they were terribly crestfallen when they found out that the only real bit about this duck was its beak. It was the beak of a Labrador duck stuck onto the body of a domestic duck.
Well, now tell us about a couple of the human odd ducks you found along the way.
Yeah, peculiar characters. But I guess they must have been obsessive, too, to go to the ends of the world and spend so much money on peculiar specimens. Let me see. There was one that was found in the late 1940s in Britain, and it was offered for sale to the National Museum in England for £500, and unfortunately they turned it down. That duck wound up in the hands of an insane millionaire who just collected everything, including everything associated with birds. And he moved to the Bahamas. Of course, I completely lost track of this. This is now more than half a century ago. I tracked it and I tracked it until I eventually found it in the possession of a millionaire, billionaire, I suppose, sheikh in the Middle East. And he had it locked up in his private collection in the Middle East.
What leads a sheikh to want a Labrador duck?
This particular sheikh, who was at the time the Minister of Culture and Antiquities in his country, just loved beautiful things, and he thought this Labrador duck, as rare as it was a beautiful thing. And I suppose he knew there was never going to be another one available. All the other ones are locked up in museums like the Smithsonian. They're not going to sell. And so he got a hold of it. And just by fluke, I got to examine it.
What can specimens like those you hunted down and examined tell us about the Labrador duck?
Those specimens can tell us quite a bit, particularly if they still have the little tags around their legs about where they were collected, in what season, and so on. Unfortunately, we know so little about the duck that any new information is important, like perhaps its migration routes, like the dates that it was on the wintering grounds. It's really my hope that as analytical chemistry advances, we may be able to test the theory that they were polluted into extinction by taking very small samples and subjecting them to chemical analysis. Were they really polluted into extinction? By taking small samples and doing DNA analysis on it, we can tell which birds they were most closely related to. They weren't obviously a scoter, but that's what they look like. It turns out through DNA analysis that they're most closely related to the eiders, another sea duck.
What can we take away from the story of the Labrador duck and its demise and apply to where we are today in trying to protect the animals that we live with on the planet now?
I think, Celeste, that the most important message to be learned from the Labrador duck is this one. Things slip away from us almost without us noticing. The Labrador duck was first discovered less than 100 years before it went extinct. And a few people noticed that its population seemed to be declining, and then almost without a whimper, it was gone. And I really fear that if we're not paying a lot of attention, a lot more than we are right now, we may continue to lose plants and animals, precious aspects of biodiversity, just because we're not paying enough attention.
If I wanted to see a specimen here in the U.S., where should I go?
Unfortunately, there's none close to where you are on the West Coast. The best opportunities are in New York City. They've got four on display, although they used to have five. One was stolen not that long ago, so it's still missing. It's out there somewhere. Philadelphia, the Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia, has two on display, and there are two in Boston. After that, you're going to have to go overseas to Dublin, for instance, to see them.
I wouldn't mind making that trip.
Well, yeah, go to Dublin, have a couple of pints of Guinness, and look at a stuffed Labrador duck.
There you go. And New York City, Philadelphia, and Boston aren't all that far away.
They're not that far away, and they've got nice displays.
Well, I wonder if you've started something here now. I wonder if people will look for the Labrador duck.
I hope they will. In fact, I am so keen for them to find additional stuffed specimens that I've offered a reward of $10,000.
Right. Maybe that stolen bird will turn up.
It could, the one from New York City, or one of the ones that was lost during the Second World War. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, there we have to leave it. Glenn Chilton, thank you very much for talking with me this afternoon.
It is my great pleasure, Celeste.
Glenn Chilton is the author of The Curse of the Labrador Duck, My Obsessive Quest to the Edge of Extinction.
Earth and Sky.
Extinct animals might hold clues to the survival of today's endangered species. That's according to molecular biologist Stephen Schuster of Penn State. He sequenced a mammoth genome using DNA material preserved in permafrost in Siberia for tens of thousands of years.
We generated complete sequences of their mitochondria, a teeny-weeny bit of the genome that is only inherited from the mother.
Schuster and his team compared genes from 18 different mammoths. He discovered that these animals, which used to number in the millions, were divided into huge, genetically distinct families hundreds of thousands of years ago.
Then the closer you get to extinction, you will find the same, very similar individuals over and over again.
In other words, as the mammoth population grew smaller, partly, Schuster says, because of human encroachment, mammoths also became a lot less genetically diverse and less resistant to stress. They finally eventually died off, he said. And Schuster added, a number of today's endangered species show this same